Credo, Plato. Listen to and download free AI-generated audiobooks at 3ords.com. The Project Gutenberg ebook of Credo. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook title. Credo author, Plato translator. Benjamin Jowett, release date, March 1, 1999, ebook 1657, most recently updated, December 31, 2020 language, English other information and formats, www.gutenberg.org/ebooks/1657, credits. This edX was prepared by Sue Astur. Asterisk start of the project GUTMBRG EBOOK CRITO asterisk asterisk. This ebook was converted to HTML with additional editing by Jose Menendez from the text edition produced by Sue Astur, Credo by Plato, translated by Benjamin Jowett, introduction. The Credo seems intended to exhibit the character of Socrates in one light. Only not as the philosopher, fulfilling a divine mission and trusting in the will of heaven, but simply as the good citizen who, having been unjustly condemned, is willing to give up his life in obedience to the laws of the state. The days of Socrates are drawing to a close. The fatal ship has been seen. Off Sunium, as he is informed by his aged friend and contemporary Credo, who visits him before the dawn has broken, he himself has been warned in a dream that on the third day he must depart. Time is precious, and Credo has come early in order to gain his consent to a plan of escape. This can be easily accomplished by his friends, who will incur no danger in making the attempt to save him, but will be disgraced forever if they allow him to perish. He should think of his duty to his children and not play into the hands of his enemies. Money is already provided by Credo as well as by Simmias and others, and he will have no difficulty in finding friends in Thessaly and other places. Socrates is afraid that Credo is but pressing upon him the opinions of the many, whereas, all his life long, he has followed the dictates of reason only and the opinion of the one wise or skilled man. There was a time when Credo himself had allowed the propriety of this, and although someone will say the many can kill us, that makes no difference, but a good life, in other words, a just and honorable life, is alone to be valued. All considerations of loss of reputation or injury to his children should be dismissed. The only question is whether he would be right in attempting to escape. Credo, who is a disinterested person not having the fear of death, before his eyes shall answer this for him. Before he was condemned, they had often held discussions in which they agreed that no man should either do evil or return evil for evil or betray the right. Are these principles to be altered because the circumstances of Socrates are altered? Credo admits that they remain the same. Then is his escape consistent with the maintenance of them? To this Credo is unable or unwilling to reply. Socrates proceeds. Suppose the laws of Athens to come and remonstrate with him, they will ask, why does he seek to overturn them? And if he replies, they have injured him, will not the laws answer, yes, but was that the agreement? Has he any objection to make to them which would justify him in overturning them? Was he not brought into the world and educated by their help, and are they not his parents? He might have left Athens and gone where he pleased, but he has lived there for 70 years more constantly than any other citizen. Thus he has clearly shown that he acknowledged the agreement, which he cannot now break without dishonor to himself and danger to his friends. Even in the course of the trial he might have proposed exile as the penalty, but then he declared that he preferred death to exile. And whither will he direct his footsteps? In any well-ordered state the laws will consider him as an enemy. Possibly in a land of misrule like Thessaly he may be welcomed at first, and the unseemly narrative of his escape will be regarded by the inhabitants as an amusing tale. But if he offends them, he will have to learn another sort of lesson. Will he continue to give lectures in virtue? That would hardly be decent. And how will his children be the gainers if he takes them into Thessaly and deprives them of Athenian citizenship? Or if he leaves them behind, does he expect that they will be better taken care of by his friends because he is in Thessaly? Will not true friends care for them equally, whether he is alive or dead? Finally, they exhort him to think of justice first and of life and children afterwards. He may now depart in peace and innocence, a sufferer, and not a doer of evil, but if he breaks agreements and returns evil for evil, they will be angry with him while he lives, and their brethren, the laws of the world below, will receive him as an enemy. Such is the mystic voice which is always murmuring in his ears. That Socrates was not a good citizen was a charge made against him during his lifetime, which has been often repeated in later ages. The crimes of Alcibiades, Critias, and Charmides, who had been his pupils, were still recent in the memory of the now restored democracy. The fact that he had been neutral in the death struggle of Athens was not likely to conciliate popular goodwill. Plato, writing probably in the next generation, undertakes the defense of his friend and master in this particular, not to the Athenians of his day, but to posterity and the world at large. Whether such an incident ever really occurred as the visit of Crito and the proposal of escape is uncertain. Plato could easily have invented far more than that one, and in the selection of Crito, the aged friend, as the fittest person to make the proposal to Socrates, we seem to recognize the hand of the artist. Whether anyone who has been subjected by the laws of his country to an unjust judgment is right in attempting to escape is a thesis about which casuists might disagree. Shelley, too, is of opinion that Socrates did well to die, but not for the sophistical reasons which Plato has put into his mouth. And there would be no difficulty in arguing that Socrates should have lived and preferred to a glorious death the good which he might still be able to perform. A rhetorician would have had much to say upon that point. It may be observed, however, that Plato never intended to answer the question of casuistry, but only to exhibit the ideal of patient virtue which refuses to do the least evil in order to avoid the greatest and to show his master, maintaining in death the opinions which he had professed in his life. Not the world, but the one wise man is still the paradox of Socrates in his last hours. He must be guided by reason, although her conclusions may be fatal to him. The remarkable sentiment that the wicked can do neither good nor evil is true if taken in the sense which he means of moral evil. In his own words, they cannot make a man wise or foolish. This little dialogue is a perfect piece of dialectic, in which, granting the common principle, there is no escaping from the conclusion. It is anticipated at the beginning by the dream of Socrates and the parody of Homer. The personification of the laws and of their brethren the laws in the world below is one of the noblest and boldest figures of speech which occur in Plato, Crito. Persons of the dialogue, Socrates, Crito, scene, the prison of Socrates. Socrates, why have you come at this hour, Crito? It must be quite early, Crito. Yes, certainly, Socrates, what is the exact time? Crito, the dawn is breaking, Socrates. I wonder that the keeper of the prison would let you in, Crito. He knows me because I often come, Socrates. Moreover, I have done him a kindness, Socrates. And are you only just arrived, Crito? No, I came some time ago, Socrates. Then why did you sit and say nothing instead of at once awakening me, Crito? I should not have liked myself, Socrates, to be in such great trouble and unrest as you are. Indeed, I should not. I have been watching with amazement your peaceful slumbers, and for that reason I did not awake you, because I wished to minimize the pain. I have always thought you to be of a happy disposition, but never did I see anything like the easy, tranquil manner in which you bear this calamity, Socrates. Why, Crito, when a man has reached my age, he ought not to be repining at the approach of death, Crito. And yet other old men find themselves in similar misfortunes, and age does not prevent them from repining. Socrates, that is true. But you have not told me why you come at this early hour, Crito. I come to bring you a message which is sad and painful, not, as I believe, to yourself, but to all of us who are your friends, and saddest of all to me, Socrates. What? Has the ship come from Delos, on the arrival of which I am to die, Crito? No, the ship has not actually arrived, but she will probably be here today, as persons who have come from Sunium tell me that they have left her there, and therefore tomorrow, Socrates, will be the last day of your life. Socrates, very well, Crito, if such is the will of God, I am willing, but my belief is that there will be a delay of a day, Crito. Why do you think so, Socrates? I will tell you. I am to die on the day after the arrival of the ship, Crito? Yes, that is what the authorities say. Socrates, but I do not think that the ship will be here until tomorrow. This I infer from a vision which I had last night, or rather only just now, when you fortunately allowed me to sleep, Crito. And what was the nature of the vision, Socrates? There appeared to me the likeness of a woman, fair and comely, clothed in bright raiment, who called to me and said, O Socrates, the third day hence to fertile Phthia shalt thou go. 3. Crito. What a singular dream, Socrates. Socrates, there can be no doubt about the meaning, Crito. I think, Crito, yes, the meaning is only too clear. But oh, my beloved Socrates, let me entreat you once more to take my advice and escape. For if you die, I shall not only lose a friend who can never be replaced, but there is another evil. People who do not know you and me will believe that I might have saved you if I had been willing to give money, but that I did not care. Now, can there be a worse disgrace than this, that I should be thought to value money more than the life of a friend? For the many will not be persuaded that I wanted you to escape and that you refused, Socrates. But why, my dear Crito, should we care about the opinion of the many? Good men, and they are the only persons who are worth considering, will think of these things truly as they occurred, Crito. But you see, Socrates, that the opinion of the many must be regarded, for what is now happening shows that they can do the greatest evil to anyone who has lost their good opinion, Socrates. I only wish it were so, Crito, and that the many could do the greatest evil, for then they would also be able to do the greatest good, and what a fine thing this would be. But in reality they can do neither, for they cannot make a man either wise or foolish, and whatever they do is the result of chance, Crito. Well, I will not dispute with you, but please to tell me, Socrates, whether you are not acting out of regard to me and your other friends, are you not afraid that if you escape from prison we may get into trouble with the informers for having stolen you away and lose either the whole or a great part of our property, or that even a worse evil may happen to us? Now, if you fear on our account, be at ease, for in order to save you we ought surely to run this or even a greater risk. Be persuaded then, and do as I say, Socrates. Yes, Crito, that is one fear which you mention, but by no means the only one. Crito, fear not, there are persons who are willing to get you out of prison at no great cost. And as for the informers, they are far from being exorbitant in their demands. A little money will satisfy them. My means, which are certainly ample, are at your service, and if you have a scruple about spending all mine, here are strangers who will give you the use of theirs. And one of them, Simmias the Theban, has brought a large sum of money for this very purpose, and Cebes and many others are prepared to spend their money in helping you to escape. I say, therefore, do not hesitate on our account, and do not say, as you did in the court, for that you will have a difficulty in knowing what to do with yourself anywhere else. For men will love you in other places to which you may go, and not in Athens only. There are friends of mine in Thessaly, if you like to go to them, who will value and protect you, and no Thessalian will give you any trouble. Nor can I think that you are at all justified, Socrates, in betraying your own life when you might be saved. In acting thus you are playing into the hands of your enemies, who are hurrying on your destruction. And further, I should say that you are deserting your own children, for you might bring them up and educate them, instead of which you go away and leave them, and they will have to take their chance. And if they do not meet with the usual fate of orphans, there will be small thanks to you. No man should bring children into the world who is unwilling to persevere to the end in their nurture and education. But you appear to be choosing the easier part, not the better and manlier, which would have been more becoming in one who professes to care for virtue in all his actions, like yourself. And indeed, I am ashamed not only of you, but of us who are your friends, when I reflect that the whole business will be attributed entirely to our want of courage. The trial need never have come on, or might have been managed differently, and this last act or crowning folly will seem to have occurred through our negligence and cowardice, who might have saved you if we had been good for anything, and you might have saved yourself, for there was no difficulty at all. See now, Socrates, how sad and discreditable are the consequences both to us and you. Make up your mind then, or rather have your mind already made up, for the time of deliberation is over, and there is only one thing to be done, which must be done this very night, and if we delay at all, will be no longer practicable or possible. I beseech you, therefore, Socrates, be persuaded by me and do as I say, Socrates. Dear Crito, your zeal is invaluable if a right one, but if wrong, the greater the zeal, the greater the danger, and therefore we ought to consider whether I shall or shall not do as you say. For I am and always have been one of those natures who must be guided by reason, whatever the reason may be, which upon reflection appears to me to be the best. And now that this chance has befallen me, I cannot repudiate my own words. The principles which I have hitherto honored and revered I still honor, and unless we can at once find other and better principles, I am certain not to agree with you, no, not even if the power of the multitude could inflict many more imprisonments, confiscations, deaths, frightening us like children with hobgoblin terrors. 5. What will be the fairest way of considering the question? Shall I return to your old argument about the opinions of men. We were saying that some of them are to be regarded and others not. Now were we right in maintaining this? Before I was condemned? And has the argument which was once good now proved to be talk for the sake of talking, mere childish nonsense? That is what I want to consider with your help, Crito, whether under my present circumstances the argument appears to be in any way different or not, and is to be allowed by me or disallowed. That argument, which, as I believe, is maintained by many persons of authority, was to the effect, as I was saying, that the opinions of some men are to be regarded, and of other men, not to be regarded. Now you, Crito, are not going to die tomorrow. At least, there is no human probability of this, and therefore you are disinterested and not liable to be deceived by the circumstances in which you are placed. Tell me then whether I am right in saying that some opinions and the opinions of some men only are to be valued, and that other opinions and the opinions of other men are not to be valued. I ask you whether I was right in maintaining this, Crito. Certainly, Socrates. The good are to be regarded and not the bad, Crito. Yes, Socrates. And the opinions of the wise are good and the opinions of the unwise are evil, Crito. Certainly, Socrates. And what was said about another matter? Is the pupil who devotes himself to the practice of gymnastics supposed to attend to the praise and blame and opinion of every man, or of one man only, his physician or trainer, whoever he may be? Crito, of one man only, Socrates. And he ought to fear the censure and welcome the praise of that one only, and not of the many, Crito. Clearly so, Socrates. And he ought to act and train and eat and drink in the way which seems good to his single master who has understanding, rather than according to the opinion of all other men put together, Crito. True, Socrates. And if he disobeys and disregards the opinion and approval of the one and regards the opinion of the many who have no understanding, will he not suffer evil, Crito? Certainly he will, Socrates. And what will the evil be, whither tending and what affecting? In the disobedient person, Crito. Clearly affecting the body, that is what is destroyed by the evil, Socrates. Very good. And is not this true, Crito, of other things which we need not separately enumerate? In questions of just and unjust, fair and foul, good and evil, which are the subjects of our present consultation, ought we to follow the opinion of the many and to fear them, or the opinion of the one man who has understanding? Ought we not to fear and reverence him more than all the rest of the world? And if we desert him, shall we not destroy and injure that principle in us which may be assumed to be improved by justice and deteriorated by injustice? There is such a principle, Crito. Certainly there is, Socrates. Socrates, take a parallel instance. If acting under the advice of those who have no understanding, we destroy that which is improved by health and is deteriorated by disease, would life be worth having? And that which has been destroyed is the body, Crito. Yes, Socrates. Could we live having an evil and corrupted body, Crito? Certainly not, Socrates. And will life be worth having if that higher part of man be destroyed, which is improved by justice and depraved by injustice? Do we suppose that principle, whatever it may be in man, which has to do with justice and injustice, to be inferior to the body, Crito? Certainly not, Socrates. More honorable than the body, Crito, far more, Socrates. Then, my friend, we must not regard what the many say of us, but what he, the one man who has understanding of just and unjust, will say, and what the truth will say. And therefore you begin in error when you advise that we should regard the opinion of the many about just and unjust, good and evil, honorable and dishonorable. Well, someone will say, but the many can kill us. Crito, yes, Socrates, that will clearly be the answer, Socrates, and it is true, but still I find with surprise that the old argument is unshaken as ever. And I should like to know whether I may say the same of another proposition, that not life but a good life is to be chiefly valued, Crito. Yes, that also remains unshaken. Socrates, and a good life is equivalent to a just and honorable one, that holds also. Crito, yes, it does, Socrates. From these premises, I proceed to argue the question whether I ought or ought not to try and escape without the consent of the Athenians, and if I am clearly right in escaping, then I will make the attempt, but if not, I will abstain. The other considerations which you mention, of money and loss of character and the duty of educating one's children, are, I fear, only the doctrines of the multitude, who would be as ready to restore people to life if they were able as they are to put them to death, and with as little reason. But now, since the argument has thus far prevailed, the only question which remains to be considered is whether we shall do rightly either in escaping or in suffering others to aid in our escape and paying them in money and thanks, or whether in reality we shall not do rightly, and if the latter, then death or any other calamity which may ensue on my remaining here must not be allowed to enter into the calculation. Crito, I think that you are right, Socrates. How then shall we proceed, Socrates? Let us consider the matter together, and do you either refute me, if you can, and I will be convinced, or else cease, my dear friend, from repeating to me that I ought to escape against the wishes of the Athenians, for I highly value your attempts to persuade me to do so, but I may not be persuaded against my own better judgment. And now please to consider my first position and try how you can best answer me, Crito. I will. Socrates, are we to say that we are never intentionally to do wrong, or that in one way we ought and in another way we ought not to do wrong, or is doing wrong always evil and dishonorable, as I was just now saying, and as has been already acknowledged by us? Are all our former admissions which were made within a few days to be thrown away? And have we, at our age, been earnestly discoursing with one another all our life long only to discover that we are no better than children? Or, in spite of the opinion of the many, and in spite of consequences, whether better or worse, shall we insist on the truth of what was then said, that injustice is always an evil, and dishonor to him who acts unjustly? Shall we say so or not, Crito? Yes, Socrates, then we must do no wrong, Crito. Certainly not, Socrates. Nor, when injured, injure in return, as the many imagine, for we must injure no one at all. 6. Crito, clearly not. Socrates, again, Crito, may we do evil, Crito? Surely not, Socrates, Socrates. And what of doing evil in return for evil, which is the morality of the many? Is that just or not, Crito? Not just, Socrates. For doing evil to another is the same as injuring him, Crito? Very true, Socrates. Then we ought not to retaliate or render evil for evil to anyone, whatever evil we may have suffered from him. But I would have you consider, Crito, whether you really mean what you are saying. For this opinion has never been held and never will be held by any considerable number of persons, and those who are agreed and those who are not agreed upon this point have no common ground and can only despise one another when they see how widely they differ. Tell me, then, whether you agree with an assent to my first principle that neither injury nor retaliation, nor warding off evil by evil is ever right. And shall that be the premise of our argument? Or do you decline and dissent from this? For so I have ever thought and continue to think, but if you are of another opinion, let me hear what you have to say. If, however, you remain of the same mind as formerly, I will proceed to the next step. Crito, you may proceed, for I have not changed my mind. Socrates, then I will go on to the next point, which may be put in the form of a question. Ought a man to do what he admits to be right, or ought he to betray the right, Crito? He ought to do what he thinks right, Socrates. But if this is true, what is the application? In leaving the prison against the will of the Athenians, do I wrong any? Or rather, do I not wrong those whom I ought least to wrong? Do I not desert the principles which were acknowledged by us to be just? What do you say, Crito? I cannot tell, Socrates, for I do not know, Socrates. Then consider the matter in this way. Imagine that I am about to play truant. You may call the proceeding by any name which you like, and the laws and the government come and interrogate me. Tell us, Socrates, they say, what are you about? Are you not going by an act of yours to overturn us, the laws, and the whole state as far as in you lies? Do you imagine that a state can subsist and not be overthrown, in which the decisions of law have no power, but are set aside and trampled upon by individuals? What will be our answer, Crito, to these and the like words? Anyone, and especially a rhetorician, will have a good deal to say on behalf of the law which requires a sentence to be carried out. He will argue that this law should not be set aside, and shall we reply, yes, but the state has injured us and given an unjust sentence? Suppose I say that, Crito, very good, Socrates, Socrates, and was that our agreement with you? The law would answer, or were you to abide by the sentence of the state? And if I were to express my astonishment at their words, the law would probably add, answer, Socrates, instead of opening your eyes, you are in the habit of asking and answering questions. Tell us, what complaint have you to make against us, which justifies you in attempting to destroy us and the state? In the first place, did we not bring you into existence? Your father married your mother by our aid and begat you. Say whether you have any objection to urge against those of us who regulate marriage? None, I should reply. Or against those of us who after birth regulate the nurture and education of children in which you also were trained? Were not the laws which have the charge of education right in commanding your father to train you in music and gymnastic? Right, I should reply. Well then, since you were brought into the world and nurtured and educated by us, Can you deny in the first place that you are our child and slave, as your fathers were before you? And if this is true, you are not on equal terms with us. Nor can you think that you have a right to do to us what we are doing to you. Would you have any right to strike or revile or do any other evil to your father, or your master, if you had one, because you have been struck or reviled by him or received some other evil at his hands? You would not say this. And because we think right to destroy you, do you think that you have any right to destroy us in return and your country as far as in you lies? Will you, O professor of true virtue, pretend that you are justified in this? Has a philosopher like you failed to discover that our country is more to be valued and higher and holier far than mother or father or any ancestor, and more to be regarded in the eyes of the gods and of men of understanding, also to be soothed and gently and reverently entreated when angry, even more than a father, and either to be persuaded or, if not persuaded, to be obeyed? And when we are punished by her, whether with imprisonment or stripes, the punishment is to be endured in silence. And if she lead us to wounds or death in battle, thither we follow as is right. Neither may anyone yield or retreat or leave his rank, but whether in battle or in a court of law or in any other place, he must do what his city and his country order him, or he must change their view of what is just. And if he may do no violence to his father or mother, much less may he do violence to his country. What answer shall we make to this, Crito? Do the laws speak truly, or do they not, Crito? I think that they do, Socrates. Then the laws will say, consider, Socrates, if we are speaking truly, that in your present attempt you are going to do us an injury. For, having brought you into the world and nurtured and educated you and given you and every other citizen a share in every good which we had to give, we further proclaim to any Athenian by the liberty which we allow him, that if he does not like us when he has become of age and has seen the ways of the city and made our acquaintance, he may go where he pleases and take his goods with him. None of us laws will forbid him or interfere with him. Anyone who does not like us in the city and who wants to emigrate to a colony or to any other city may go where he likes, retaining his property. But he who has experience of the manner in which we order justice and administer the state and still remains has entered into an implied contract that he will do as we command him. And he who disobeys us is, as we maintain, thrice wrong. First, because in disobeying us he is disobeying his parents. Secondly, because we are the authors of his education. Thirdly, because he has made an agreement with us that he will duly obey our commands, and he neither obeys them nor convinces us that our commands are unjust, and we do not rudely impose them, but give him the alternative of obeying or convincing us. That is what we offer, and he does neither. These are the sort of accusations to which, as we were saying, you, Socrates, will be exposed if you accomplish your intentions, you above all other Athenians. Suppose now I ask why I rather than anybody else. They will justly retort upon me that I above all other men have acknowledged the agreement. There is clear proof, they will say, Socrates, that we and the city were not displeasing to you. Of all Athenians, you have been the most constant resident in the city, which, as you never leave, you may be supposed to love. 7. For you never went out of the city, either to see the games, except once when you went to the Isthmus, or to any other place unless when you were on military service, nor did you travel as other men do. Nor had you any curiosity to know other states or their laws. Your affections did not go beyond us in our state. We were your especial favorites, and you acquiesced in our government of you. And here in this city you begat your children, which is a proof of your satisfaction. Moreover, you might in the course of the trial, if you had liked, have fixed the penalty at banishment. The state which refuses to let you go now would have let you go then. But you pretended that you preferred death to exile, 8, and that you were not unwilling to die. And now you have forgotten these fine sentiments and pay no respect to us, the laws of whom you are the destroyer, and are doing what only a miserable slave would do, running away and turning your back upon the compacts and agreements which you made as a citizen. And first of all, answer this very question. Are we right in saying that you agreed to be governed according to us in deed and not in word only? Is that true or not? How shall we answer, Crito? Must we not assent, Crito? We cannot help it, Socrates, Socrates. Then will they not say, you, Socrates, are breaking the covenants and agreements which you made with us at your leisure, not in any haste or under any compulsion or deception, but after you have had 70 years to think of them, during which time you were at liberty to leave the city, if we were not to your mind, or if our covenants appeared to you to be unfair. You had your choice and might have gone either to Lacedaemon or Crete, both which states are often praised by you for their good government, or to some other Hellenic or foreign state. Whereas you above, all other Athenians seem to be so fond of the state, or in other words, of us, her laws, and who would care about a state which has no laws, that you never stirred out of her, the halt, the blind, the maimed were not, more stationary in her than you were. And now you run away and forsake your agreements. Not so, Socrates, if you will take our advice, do not make yourself ridiculous by escaping out of the city. For just consider, if you transgress and err in this sort of way, what good will you do either to yourself or to your friends? That your friends will be driven into exile and deprived of citizenship, or will lose their property is tolerably cert. And you yourself, if you fly to one of the neighboring cities, as for example, Thebes or Megara, both of which are well governed, will come to them as an enemy, Socrates, and their government will be against you, and all patriotic citizens will cast an evil eye upon you as a subverter of the laws, and you will confirm in the minds of the judges the justice of their own condemnation of you. For he who is a corrupter of the laws is more than likely to be a corrupter of the young and foolish portion of mankind. Will you then flee from well-ordered cities and virtuous men? And is existence worth having on these terms? Or will you go to them without shame and talk to them, Socrates? And what will you say to them? What you say here about virtue and justice and institutions and laws being the best things among men? Would that be decent of you? Surely not. But if you go away from well-governed states to Crito's friends in Thessaly, where there is great disorder and license, they will be charmed to hear the tale of your escape from prison, set off with ludicrous particulars of the manner in which you were wrapped in a goatskin or some other disguise, and metamorphosed as the manner is of runaways. But will there be no one to remind you that in your old age you were not ashamed to violate the most sacred laws from a miserable desire of a little more life? Perhaps not, if you keep them in a good temper. But if are out of temper, you will hear many degrading things. You will live, but how? As the flatterer of all men and the servant of all men, and doing what? Eating and drinking in Thessaly, having gone abroad in order that you may get a dinner. And where will be your fine sentiments about justice and virtue? Say that you wish to live for the sake of your children, you want to bring them up and educate them. Will you take them into Thessaly and deprive them of Athenian citizenship? Is this the benefit which you will confer upon them? Or are you under the impression that they will be better cared for and educated here if you are still alive, although absent from them, for your friends will take care of them? Do you fancy that if you are an inhabitant of Thessaly, they will take care of them, and if you are an inhabitant of the other world, that they will not take care of them? Nay, but if they who call themselves friends are good for anything, they will, to be sure they will. Listen, then, Socrates, to us who have brought you up. Think not of life and children first and of justice afterwards, but of justice first, that you may be justified before the princes of the world below. For neither will you nor any that belong to you be happier or holier or juster in this life, or happier in another, if you do as Crito bids. Now you depart in innocence, a sufferer and not a doer of evil, a victim not of the laws, but of men. But if you go forth, returning evil for evil and injury for injury, breaking the covenants and agreements which you have made with us, and wronging those whom you ought least of all to wrong, that is to say, yourself, your friends, your country, and us, we shall be angry with you while you live, and our brethren, the laws in the world below, will receive you as an enemy, for they will know that you have done your best to destroy us. Listen then to us and not to Crito. This, dear Crito, is the voice which I seem to hear murmuring in my ears, like the sound of the flute in the ears of the mystic. That voice, I say, is humming in my ears and prevents me from hearing any other. And I know that anything more which you may say will be vain. Yet speak if you have anything to say, Crito. I have nothing to say, Socrates, Socrates. Leave me then, Crito, to fulfill the will of God and to follow whither he leads. 1. C. Phaedrus. 2. C. Prose Works. 3. Homer, Iliad. IX. 4. CP. Apology. 5. CP. Apology. 6. CP. Republic. 7. CP. Phaedrus. 8. CP. Apology. End of the project. GUTMBRGEBOOKCRITO asterisk asterisk. Updated editions will replace the previous one. The old editions will be renamed. Creating the works from print editions not protected by U.S. copyright law means that no one owns a United States copyright in these works. So the foundation and you can copy and distribute it in the United States without permission and without paying copyright royalties. Special rules set forth in the general terms of use part of this license apply to copying and distributing project Gutenberg trademark electronic works to protect the project GUTMBRGTM concept and trademark. Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark and may not be used if you charge for an ebook, except by following The terms of the trademark license, including paying royalties for use, of the Project Gutenberg trademark. If you do not charge anything for copies of this ebook, complying with the trademark license is very easy. You may use this ebook for nearly any purpose, such as creation of derivative works, reports, performances, and research. Project Gutenberg ebooks may be modified and printed and given away. You may do practically anything in the United States with ebooks not protected by U.S. copyright law. Redistribution is subject to the trademark license, especially commercial redistribution. Start full license, the full Project GUTMBRGTM license. Please read this before you distribute or use this work to protect the Project Gutenberg trademark mission of promoting the free distribution of electronic works by using or distributing this work or any other work associated in any way with the phrase Project Gutenberg. You agree to comply with all the terms of the full Project Gutenberg license available with this file or online at www.gutenberg.org/license. Section 1. General Terms of Use and Redistributing Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. 1A. By reading or using any part of this Project Gutenberg electronic work, you indicate that you have read, understand, agree to, and accept all the terms of this license and intellectual property. Trademark Copyright Agreement. If you do not agree to abide by all the terms of this agreement, you must cease using and return or destroy all copies of Project Gutenberg electronic works in your possession. If you paid a fee for obtaining a copy of or access to a Project Gutenberg electronic work and you do not agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement, you may obtain a refund from the person or entity to whom you paid the fee as set forth in paragraph 1E8. 1B, Project Gutenberg is a registered trademark. It may only be used on or associated in any way with an electronic work by people who agree to be bound by the terms of this agreement. There are a few things that you can do with most Project Gutenberg electronic works, even without complying with the full terms of this agreement. C. Paragraph 1C below. There are a lot of things you can do with Project Gutenberg electronic works if you follow the terms of this agreement and help preserve free future access to Project Gutenberg electronic works. See paragraph 1E below. 1C. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the Foundation, or PGLAF, owns a compilation copyright in the collection of Project Gutenberg electronic works. Nearly all the individual works in the collection are in the public domain in the United States. If an individual work is unprotected by copyright law in the United States and you are located in the United States, we do not claim a right to prevent you from copying, distributing, performing, displaying, or creating derivative works based on the work as long as all references to Project Gutenberg are removed. Of course, we hope that you will support the Project Gutenberg mission of promoting free access to electronic works by freely sharing Project Gutenberg works in compliance with the terms of this agreement for keeping the Project Gutenberg name associated with the work. You can easily comply with the terms of this agreement by keeping this work in the same format with its attached full Project Gutenberg license when you share it without charge with others. 1D. The copyright laws of the place where you are located also govern what you can do with this work. Copyright laws in most countries are in a constant state of change. If you are outside the United States, check the laws of your country in addition to the terms of this agreement before downloading, copying, displaying, performing, distributing, or creating derivative works based on this work or any other Project Gutenberg work. The Foundation makes no representations concerning the copyright status of any work in any country other than the United States. 1E. Unless you have removed all references to Project Gutenberg. 1E1. The following sentence with active links to or other immediate access to the full Project Gutenberg license must appear prominently whenever any copy of a Project Gutenberg work, any work, on which the phrase Project Gutenberg appears or with which the phrase Project Gutenberg is associated is accessed, displayed, performed, viewed, copied, or distributed. This ebook is for the use of anyone anywhere in the United States and most other parts of the world at no cost and with almost no restrictions whatsoever. You may copy it, give it away, or reuse it under the terms of the Project Gutenberg trademark license included with this ebook or online at www.gutenberg.org. If you are not located in the United States, you will have to check the laws of the country where you are located before using this ebook. 1E2. If an individual project Gutenberg electronic work is derived from texts not protected by U.S. copyright law, does not contain a notice indicating that it is posted with permission of the copyright holder, the work can be copied and distributed to anyone in the United States without paying any fees or charges. If you are redistributing or providing access to work with the phrase project Gutenberg associated with or appearing on the work, you must comply either with the requirements of paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 or obtain permission for the use of the work and the project Gutenberg trademark as set forth in paragraphs 1E8 or 1E9. 1. E3. If an individual project Gutenberg electronic work is posted with the permission of the copyright holder, your use and distribution must comply with both paragraphs 1E1 through 1E7 and any additional terms imposed by the copyright holder. Additional terms will be linked to the Project Gutenberg license for all works posted with the permission of the copyright holder found at the beginning of this work. 1. E4. Do not unlink or detach or remove the full Project Gutenberg license terms from this work or any files containing a part of this work or any other work associated with Project Gutenberg. 1. E5. Do not copy, display, perform, distribute, or redistribute this electronic work or any part of this electronic work without prominently displaying the sentence set forth in paragraph 1E1 with active links or immediate access to the full terms of the project Gutenberg license. 1. E6. You may convert to and distribute this work in any binary, compressed, marked up, non-proprietary or proprietary form, including any word processing or hypertext form. However, if you provide access to or distribute copies of a Project Gutenberg work in a format other than plain vanilla ASCII or other format used in the official version posted on the official Project Gutenberg website, www.gutenberg.org, you must at no additional cost, fee, or expense to the user provide a copy, a means of exporting a copy, or a means of obtaining a copy upon request of the work in its original plain vanilla ASCII or other form. Any alternate format must include the full Project Gutenberg license as specified in paragraph 1E1, 1, E7. Do not charge a fee for access to viewing, displaying, performing, copying, or distributing any Project Gutenberg works, unless you comply with paragraph 1E8 or 1E9, 1, E8. You may charge a reasonable fee for copies of or providing access to or distributing Project Gutenberg electronic works, provided that you pay a royalty fee of 20% of the gross profits you derive from the use of Project Gutenberg works calculated using the method you already use to calculate your applicable taxes. The fee is owed to the owner of the Project Gutenberg trademark, but he has agreed to donate royalties under this paragraph to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. Royalty payments must be paid within 60 days following each date on which you prepare or are legally required to prepare your periodic tax returns. Royalty payments should be clearly marked as such and sent to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation at the address specified in Section 4, Information about Donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. You provide a full refund of any money paid by a user who notifies you in writing or by email within 30 days of receipt that /he does not agree to the terms of the full Project Gutenberg trademark license. You must require such a user to return or destroy all copies of the works possessed in a physical medium and discontinue all use of and all access to other copies of Project Gutenberg trademark works. You provide, in accordance with paragraph 1F3, a full refund of any money paid for a work or a replacement copy if a defect in the electronic work is discovered and reported to you within 90 days of receipt of the work. You comply with all other terms of this agreement for free distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark works. 1. E9. If you wish to charge a fee or distribute a Project Gutenberg trademark electronic work or group of works on different terms than are set forth in this agreement, you must obtain permission in writing from the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the manager of the Project Gutenberg trademark. Contact the foundation as set forth in section 3 below. 1F1F1. Project Gutenberg volunteers and employees expend considerable effort to identify, do copyright research on, transcribe, and proofread works not protected by U.S. copyright law in creating the Project Gutenberg trademark collection. Despite these efforts, Project Gutenberg trademark, electronic works, and the medium on which they may be stored may contain defects, such as, but not limited to, incomplete, inaccurate, or corrupt data, transcription errors, a copyright, or other. Intellectual property infringement, a defective or damaged disk or other medium, a computer virus or computer codes that damage or cannot be read by your equipment. 1F2. Limited warranty disclaimer of DMAGS, except for the right of replacement or refund described in paragraph 1F3, the project. Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, the owner of the project. Gutenberg Trademark Trademark, and any other party distributing a project. Gutenberg Trademark Electronic Work under this agreement, disclaim all liability to you for damages, costs, and expenses, including legal fees. You agree that you have no remedies for negligence, strict liability, breach of warranty, or breach of contract, except those provided in paragraph 1F3. You agree that the foundation, THE, trademark owner, and any distributor under this agreement will not be liable to you for actual, direct, indirect, consequential, punitive, or incidental damages, even if you give notice of the possibility of such damage. 1F3. Limited right of replacement or refund. If you discover a defect in this electronic work within 90 days of receiving it, you can receive a refund of the money, if any, you paid for it by sending a written explanation to the person you received the work from. If you receive the work on a physical medium, you must return the medium with your written explanation. The person or entity that provided you with the defective work may elect to provide a replacement copy in lieu of a refund. If you receive the work electronically, the person or entity providing it to you may choose to give you a second opportunity to receive the work electronically in lieu of a refund. If the second copy is also defective, you may demand a refund in writing without further opportunities to fix the problem. 1F4. Except for the limited right of replacement or refund set forth in paragraph 1F3, this work is provided to you as is with no other warranties of any kind, express or implied, including but not limited to warranties of MERC Chanti BLITY or fitness for any purpose. 1F5. Some states do not allow disclaimers of certain implied warranties or the exclusion or limitation of certain types of damages. If any disclaimer or limitation set forth in this agreement violates the law of the state applicable to this agreement, the agreement shall be interpreted to make the maximum disclaimer or limitation permitted by the applicable state law. The invalidity or unenforceability of any provision of this agreement shall not void the remaining provisions. 1F6. Indemnity. You agree to indemnify and hold the foundation, the trademark owner, any agent or employee of the foundation, anyone, providing copies of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works in accordance with this agreement, and any volunteers associated with the production, promotion, and distribution of Project Gutenberg trademark electronic works, harmless from all liability, costs, and expenses, including legal fees that arise directly or indirectly from any of the following which you do or cause to occur: a distribution of this or any Project Gutenberg work, b alteration, modification, or additions or deletions to any Project Gutenberg work, and c any defect you cause. Section 2. Information about the mission of Project Gutenberg. Project Gutenberg is synonymous with the free distribution of electronic works in formats readable by the widest variety of computers, including obsolete, old, middle-aged, and new computers. It exists because of the efforts of hundreds of volunteers and donations from people in all walks of life. Volunteers and financial support to provide volunteers with the assistance they need are critical to reaching Project Gutenberg goals and ensuring that the Project Gutenberg collection will remain freely available for generations to come. In 2001, the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation was created to provide a secure and permanent future for Project Gutenberg and future generations. To learn more about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation and how your efforts and donations can help, see Sections 3 and 4 and the Foundation Information page at www.gutenberg.org, Section 3. Information about the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation. The Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation is a nonprofit, 501c3 3. Educational corporation organized under the laws of the state of Mississippi and granted tax-exempt status by the Internal Revenue Service. The foundation's EIN or federal tax identification number is 64622-1541. Contributions to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation are tax-deductible to the full extent permitted by U.S. federal laws and your state's laws. The foundation's business office is located at 41 Watchung Plaza 516, Montclair NJ 7042, USA, plus 1-862-620-19288. Email contact links and up-to-date contact information can be found at the foundation's website and official page at www.gutenberg.org/contact, section 4. Information about donations to the Project Gutenberg. Literary Archive Foundation. Project Gutenberg trademark depends upon and cannot survive without widespread public support and donations to carry out its mission of increasing the number of public domain and licensed works that can be freely distributed in machine-readable form accessible by the widest array of equipment, including outdated equipment. Many small donations, $1 to $5,000, are particularly important to maintaining tax-exempt status with the IRS. The foundation is committed to complying with the laws regulating charities and charitable donations in all 50 states of the United States. Compliance requirements are not uniform, and it takes a considerable effort, much paperwork, and many fees to meet and keep up with these requirements. We do not solicit donations in locations where we have not received written confirmation of compliance. To send donations or determine the status of compliance for any particular state, visit www.gutenberg.org/donate. While we cannot and do not solicit contributions from states where we have not met the solicitation requirements, we know of no prohibition against accepting unsolicited donations from donors in such states who approach us with offers to donate. International donations are gratefully accepted, but we cannot make any statements concerning tax treatment of donations received from outside the United States. U.S. laws alone swamp our small staff. Please check the Project Gutenberg web pages for current donation methods and addresses. Donations are accepted in a number of other ways, including checks, online payments, and credit card donations. To donate, please visit www.gutenberg.org/donate, section 5. General information about Project Gutenberg Electronic Works. Professor Michael S. Hart was the originator of the project. Gutenberg concept of a library of electronic works that could be freely shared with anyone. For 40 years, he produced and distributed Project Gutenberg ebooks with only a loose network of volunteer support. Project Gutenberg ebooks are often created from several printed editions, all of which are confirmed as not protected by copyright in the U.S. unless a copyright notice is included. Thus, we do not necessarily keep ebooks in compliance with any particular paper. Addition, most people start at our website, which has the main PG search facility, www.gutenberg.org. This website includes information about Project Gutenberg, including how to make donations to the Project Gutenberg Literary Archive Foundation, how to help produce our new ebooks, and how to subscribe to our email newsletter to hear about new ebooks. This is the end of the audiobook. Thank you for listening. You can listen to and download more audiobooks at threeords.com.